This is the Multi-Faith Matters Podcast. I'm your host, John Morgan. This is the podcast for Multi-Faith Matters. I am the host, John Moorhead. And today, my guest is Heron Michelle. Did I pronounce your first name correctly?
Yes, you did. Like good. The biggest bird.
Okay, good. I'm going to read the bio that you graciously sent. Folks can look in the program notes and find a copy of the bio and links to the things that we'll be talking about today. Heron is a witch, priestess, artist, and mom. She's the founding high priestess of the Soho Circle Coven, having created a training program in modern witchcraft that has been taught publicly since 2010. Heron is the owner of the Sojourner Whole Earth Provisions Metaphysical Shop, a Reiki master, tarot diviner, and a clairvoyant specializing in past life retrieval. She writes the blog Witch on Fire at Pathos Pagan and regularly lectures at local universities, festivals, and conferences. Heron, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's a fascinating invitation.
Well, at the top, I want to thank our mutual friend, Heather Green, for connecting us. The background for our conversation today is Heather had written an article about some street preachers in, I think it was New York City, that were had recently been at a festival and had, they call it preaching, I call it heckling, harassed them in an outdoor festival. And I think you were mentioned in that piece, but I got in touch with Heather and she, I'd seen it before, but she reminded me of another piece that she had done for Religion News Services. And we're going to talk about that today. The title of that piece, folks can find the link again in the program notes, Pagan Metaphysical Shops Navigate Threats from Christian Critics. And that was your unfortunate experience. So we want to talk about that today. But before we do so, I think it's fascinating. I'd like to hear a little bit about your background in that you're a former evangelical Christian. And how did you, what was your experience, your journey from that to paganism?
Well, I think it'd be a more accurate characterization to say that I was raised in Christianity and that our path, my mother's path, and of course, you know, as my mother raised us, was a little bit wandering. I was christened in the Methodist Church. My mother and father were both Lutherans before that. Then we wandered into Southern Baptist Church in Taylor, South Carolina. And then we went overseas to Saudi Arabia for several years, at which point my mother joined an underground secret society of Christians who would meet in people's homes. And that became more non-denominational, got a little more ecstatic in its tradition. And when we came back, the Southern Baptist Church just wouldn't do it for her anymore. And so we ended up into things like Christian Fellowship, Mount Zion, something, something, and Assemblies of God, and then more into the evangelical side of things by the time I was a teenager. I've been baptized three times, three different ways, two different countries, and three different traditions. Apparently you can't wash the witch out of a...
I guess so. It just didn't stick.
It didn't stick. So I don't know that I was ever truly convinced of the Christian teaching. I was one of those weird kids that actually paid attention in services and would question the minister. I think that a lot of witches would say that there's just something inside you. You just know, you have a knowing of spirit that probably doesn't align with what you're hearing from the overculture, and you begin to seek spirit out. And what I've always understood spirit to be is divine love. So when I felt that in church, which does exist in church, the Holy Spirit moves in a loving way, that I responded to. So I eventually found out that there were other people like me who didn't define it, the practices, or didn't define the paradigm in the same way I heard in the fire and brimstone church, you know, that I was raised in. And so you eventually learn that this reverence for nature, believing that the creator of the cosmos is still within nature, is not separate, et cetera, is called paganism by modern people. And I wandered over to an identity in that. But I don't think I was ever not that. I just didn't know what to call it until I was about 15. And then I did break with my mother's church and upbringing as a teenager, because when she wandered over to the more evangelical side of the aisle, they began to preach, homophobia in a big way, and pray away the gay. And it was all very, very super conservative, very control women's reproductive rights. And it was very condemning and hateful. It became very hateful and toxic, and to me became a form of sort of spiritual terrorism. And I knew for a fact that was not in alignment with the spirit of divine love that I understand very intimately, very personally. I have a very personal relationship with divinity, and that's not what I understood to be true. So I did have a formal break with that and refused to ever go back to that church. And then eventually I found my way into Wicca and witchcraft and paganism, where I was able to define a practice that that was in alignment with my ideas of divine love and how to treat people, the whole love thy neighbor. Mm-hmm. So to be really clear, I have almost no issue with the teachings of Jesus as they are told in his story. I feel that I am philosophically in alignment with the character of Jesus as told in his story. Maybe not the story in John, but Matthew, Mark, and Luke, maybe. I have no issue there. We agree on the same things. The rest of what grew up in Christianity around that later on, way after the legendary personage of Jesus died, that I have issue with. So I always say me and JC, we're tight, but the rest of it I could do without.
Okay. I appreciate that. I think it's important for folks to hear your story, and because it also plays a part in the rest of what we're going to talk about, in sometimes in a way in which you interact with some of what you've experienced. The story that Heather wrote has to do with there, for folks who haven't heard of them or seen them, are there's a group called Street Preachers. I think they're international, and that they go around to various venues, Hindu, Buddhist, pagan, Muslim, even Comic-Cons, and they stand outside the venue and they hold up pre-printed signs and they wear t-shirts and they've got Bible verses and slogans and they use megaphones and they preach at people, hellfire and brimstone. And you were on the unfortunate end of that at your bookstore. Can you talk about that experience? How did that come about?
Well, it was a funny day. It was an entertaining day. I don't know that it actually was unfortunate, because it might be for somebody, but I'm not afraid to speak to these folks. And in this case, maybe it was because of our reaction. Our reaction was peaceful to the street preacher, EC street preacher. He had not started yelling at us yet. He didn't use the megaphone. He just was standing there on the city sidewalk, which is his right, and I also believe in the freedom of religion, and he has the freedom and the personal sovereignty to believe as he does. And I believe that, I have the same. And while he was just standing there peacefully with his very offensive, egregious sign, like you said, they have the giant sign, and it looked like flames rising. And at the top, it said, "Who would Jesus damn?" And then underneath that was a list of the kinds of people that he would damn, with scripture references next to them, to, I guess, as proof. And it was everything you can imagine. There was no one left. There was no one left. It was everybody on the list. It basically just described humanity and other religions, women with opinions, idolaters, witches, sorcerers, homosexuals, la, 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 la. I mean, it became like one of those internet games where you're like, oh yeah, what's my score? How many can I check off?
Right.
Makes me cool, or whatever. But it bothered me because that's biblically ridiculous. Jesus doesn't damn anyone. That is not even biblically accurate. Right? maybe my interpretation is different than others, but that would be, I thought, in the paradigm, that would be the Father God's judgmental role. Jesus was just there to save people and love them. So I don't know. I it just offended me. But I walked out. Well, first of all, my general manager, Courtney Varnado, walked out and engaged with him. She's also on his video, which he posted to his YouTube. And we were just having a conversation. Tell me more about what you're here and what you want to accomplish and why are you doing this? And we ended up just talking. So he never got to the egregious part where he screams things and vulgarities. That's the other thing that really bothered me. They'll scream vulgarities at people on the street. Just like, you know, a woman walks by, any woman walks by and they start screaming at her that she's a whore. And they might do this in front of children. They might, you know, it's just so un-Christian. I can't believe it. But anyway, we had a nice long conversation. He wanted to debate the things and I debated with him. I think he came there assuming we had never read the Bible because, you know, they always ask first, can I give you a Bible? Will you read it? I'm like, oh, honey, I've read that thing cover to cover so many times. I could quote you chapter and verse. I understand the Bible. That's the reason why I left. I read it. And he couldn't understand that.
Was he taken aback by that?
Oh, yeah. What was the funniest thing to me is that in the comments from his own supporters, the street preacher cult, I don't know what you want to call them, the people who do that, they would comment and sometimes they would give him a hard time because the witch knew more about the scripture than he did. And that amuses me. But we actually, I thought we had a reasonable conversation. Not that I found his positions reasonable, but he didn't start yelling at me. We still talk like human beings who honored each other's humanity, I think, for the most part. But no matter what I said, he interpreted that as me being demon-possessed.
And what now, can you do with someone? At one point in the video, doesn't he share, I think it was either you or somebody else from the bookstore had gone back inside and he was talking to the camera and he was concerned that you weren't being tolerant
yeah.
of religious beliefs. What was that all about?
Right. I think he even titled the video Pagan Priestess is Intolerant of EC or something like that. Well, to be fair, I did get a little snappish with him on occasion. If I had a flaw, it is that occasionally I resort to sarcasm. And I was a little snappish with him. But he was saying such egregious things that basically erased my humanity, erased my free will. And I mean, his position is that I shouldn't exist. And so I think that the slight sarcasm that I gave back to him was nothing by comparison. So it's ridiculous that he thought I was being intolerant of him when I welcomed him to stay there as long as he wanted to, because honestly, the spectacle he made brought so much business to us, which is why I say it's not unfortunate. That marketing was pure gold. If I were to show you a graph of the profit and loss of my store up until that moment, and from that moment, it just climbed like mountain peaks after that. So I'm a little grateful to him for the exposure.
Yeah. Now, you said before when we were having a conversation before we started recording that you have had two instances like this. Was the other one, was it with the same gentleman or was it a different street preacher? Or what was that about?
Well, honestly, the second funny thing was just some locals. It wasn't a street preacher. It wasn't televised or televised. It wasn't on YouTube or anything. But one morning, the general manager who was seen in the beginning of that first video, Courtney was there in the back getting ready. You know, we haven't unlocked the door yet. When she heard yelling and pounding on the door and just a ruckus from the front. And so she was scared. It was scary sounding. It sounded angry and violent what was happening. So she sort of peeked around the corner to look out the front door. And there were, I believe she said, three middle-aged women, two white, one Asian descent, and they were having some sort of prayer service or something in our little vestibule. We have a little notched in vestibule. Two of the women were holding hands and sort of low drone chanting, like they were casting out the devil. And one of the women had pressed her mouth to the crack between our two doors that open and was rattling the handles and screaming to cast out the devil from our shop in the scariest language. And Courtney just sort of watched for a minute, and then it was time to open the doors. And so she just walked to the front, turned on the lights, and went to unlock the doors. And the three women just bolted. They just scattered. And she went out. She went outside. She yelled down the sidewalk, "Ladies, you're welcome to come in. We're open now. Please come in. I'll be happy to talk to you," you know, that kind of thing. And they just scattered. And when she turned back around, she could see that the front windows, the front door, everything had been anointed in crosses with oil on the windows, and that there were Christian pamphlets tucked into the decorations on our arbor outside of our door. And that's it, really. I think that they were just trying to do like a casting out of the devil from the store, which is hysterical to us because there's nothing of the devil in our store. And we anoint our own doors and windows with holy oil all the time in protection against folks like that. So we did call the police because it felt scary and threatening what they were yelling in the door. I mean, she wasn't sure what they were saying, but it sounded violent and threatening. And, you know, and if you're trying to threaten the devil to come out, I mean, you have to kind of sound angry, I guess. But the police said that, yeah, them putting stuff on our windows, them rattling the doors was illegal behavior, and they kept an eye on the store for a while to make sure. So that's it, really. There was, you know, there have been other times where folks with more conservative ideals have targeted the store with things that meant to scare us, but they weren't religion based, so I don't think that those stories pertain here as much. But
okay, that you have characterized these for yourself as funny events, but it also strikes me that we also have to be aware of the context. There was a story recently about Taylor Swift and her concert. Mm-hmm. And I guess a Christian had posted on TikTok a portion of that, one of her songs, and said that she was trying to conjure the demonic and that she was a witch and this kind of a thing. And I think in some of the comments to that video, someone made the claim, well, we just need to revive burning witches. So we do have this context on the right, this religio-political context where there is this animosity connected to those that they perceive to be affiliated with forces of darkness. So on the one hand, you see it funny, but do you also maybe in the background at times, are you concerned about those kinds of things in the context?
Well, you're absolutely correct. I shouldn't categorize it as funny. I mean, because nothing worse came of it, I guess in hindsight, it's easy to say, these poor folk, you know, that are so confused. They don't know who we are. Look how silly they're reacting. They're reacting to us. But you're right. We are scared that there will be real retributions. There have been times, like I said, when we were targeted by more conservative elements, it wasn't religious motivated, but more conservative elements, especially during the last presidential election. And, you know, we've got Black Lives Matter signs outside. We've got the rainbow, you know, in support of gay rights, that's all outside. And so we were targeted with one of those. Someone put a sticker on our door that was made by Christian religious fascists down in Florida. And it was like the hunting season sign. You know, it's made to look like what a national park might put up, that the hunting season is open,
right?
But it was for Antifa, however you say that. Antifa hunting season is open, no bag limit. And we saw that as a threat against our lives. You know, like there might be someone on the roof across the street about to pick people off coming in, you know? And we actually got the FBI involved. We called the police. They investigated. As it turns out, it wasn't anyone who could actually carry it out. It was just someone wanting to terrorize us a little bit, make us scared. And we felt scared. There's always the worry that the tables will tilt just enough to make those folks who I call it that they're from the invasive orthodoxies. You know, they want to invade, they want to conquer, they want to change us against our will, basically. And if we won't change our minds, get rid of us. You know, like you said, the witch burnings.
Right.
And that does scare us. Because, you know, especially during the previous during the previous president's term, people became very bold, you know, and like, oh, well, this will be fine. This will be fine. I can threaten people. Nothing will come of it because, you know, people at the top are saying these sorts of things, these sorts of, you know, hateful things, intolerant things. And so it's okay to do it. And yeah, that worried me.
Yeah,
I was worried the whole last 6-7 years, I've been worried that my outspokenness, see, I just, as a sort of religious, it's my sacred mission, I guess you would say, what I'm here to do. My calling is to publicly profess who I am and what I believe, not to change other people's minds, but just to say, I am here, we exist. And in a pluralistic society where there's freedom of religion, I have every right to exist. And if I live openly and honestly and communicate clearly that I believe in nothing but the goodness, you know, the divine love, and that we should behave morally and ethically to support each other and cooperate with each other, to love your neighbor as yourself, that I should say that out loud. And so I was like, well, I was very worried. Oh, well, are the tides going to turn and I will be easily found and easily targeted? Will my children be harmed by this? I was really worried about that for the last 6-7 years and the rise of all of this. And of course, the street preacher that you're speaking about, he came in August of 17. So after the tides politically had turned,
right,
he came. I haven't seen him since. I've invited him back, but he won't come back. Yeah, I did. Yeah. I said, oh, come on back, honey. Bring your camera. I'll make pie and serve sweet tea. And we'll sit down and we'll discuss theology. But he's never taken me up on the.
Well, I just think it's important for folks to be aware of that context. And even internationally, I mean, in Africa, people are still being killed for being witches. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, that's not the situation here in the U.S. However, you know, there was the satanic panic in the 1980s. In my research, in my opinion, I think that the general culture went through a satanic panic that disappeared then in the 90s. But conservative Christians always tend to maintain a sense of satanic panic. And when conditions are right, it goes into overdrive. And I think that with President Trump in the past, that was the case. And I think with his candidacy now, I think the conditions, unfortunately, are coming together again, where we may see a spike in the association of evil and the demonic, and therefore we have freedom to go after our spiritual enemies. So those listening or watching just need to be aware of the context in which these kinds of, on the one hand, they may seem innocent, but they really have serious ramifications for others. So just my two cents on the background of it.
If I could just say, I think that the rooting out of enemies is the key there. The way that I've characterized, or the way I've come to understand the worldview, the paradigm from my, you know, how I was raised in my childhood, mind you, this is colored by the hellfire and brimstone variety of churches, is that that paradigm is a battlefield paradigm, mm-hmm, between God and his adversary, or God and the Satan, or God and the devil, or God and anybody who stands against God, or whatever, right? That God, Yahweh, that one particular God. And I call it a battlefield paradigm because, you know, we're basically the whole thing is about trying to root out where is the devil and not give him any traction and et cetera. And unfortunately, when you've got a paradigm which is good versus evil, or light versus dark, or God versus anti-God, or whatever, there's a versus in there. It's a conflict. And you're living in the battlefield where people are always trying to figure out where is their enemy. That's a problem. It breeds paranoia. It breeds us versus them, with us or against us. That when I was raised, there was only with us or against us. Right. And so if I wasn't with them in lockstep on every point, I must be against them. And I was taught that if I disagree with any point, I must be in leagues with Satan. And I'm like, but that's not right. That's not right. And I just like to say for the record that the witchcraft I practice, that I teach, that I write about, that the coven of witches that I lead, we have no embodiment of evil. There is no character like that that we give any credence to. That doesn't mean we don't believe that y'all's Satan doesn't exist, but we believe you created him. I mean, and that's sort of historically biblically accurate. It didn't really come around in that form until, I don't know, Dante in the Inferno. But anyway, we don't do that. Our paradigm is a honeymoon paradigm. It's about the goddess and the god in love with each other. And it's about union and creation. So, you know, and coming together. And that doesn't mean that it's always happy times all the time. We do embrace that there has to be wholeness in the world, that there can't be light without dark, there can't be day without night, etc. There must be the full range of the spectrum of polarity in order for us to understand anything. And we are meant to learn from all sides of that. But it's still highly ethical. The witchcraft I practice and teach and write about is more ethical, I think, than the Christian ethics that was taught to me. Far more ethical, because it would say, you know, there are no real enemies. That we're all walking each other home. We're all brothers and sisters. We're all part of divinity, learning through this middle world experience, this physical world experience, meant to take back all those experiences and inform divinity of what we've learned, et cetera, and evolve forward. So the honeymoon paradigm, it doesn't have an us versus them. It does not, it should not breed paranoia. It should breed cooperation. And that's what we teach. I call what the evangelicals teach, I call that an invasive orthodoxy. And it's not just evangelical Christians, it's anybody evangelical. Like, I'm here to evangelize. It's invasive because I'm going to come into your territory or your mind or your heart or your country. And I'm going to tell you my orthodox way of believing, the right belief. There's only one right belief. I maintain the gateway to God, to divinity, and I control that. And you will only get to God through me and through us, through our way of believing. And if you don't believe the way I believe, if you don't want to approach this particular God in this exact way that I am demanding, then there will be retribution. You will be harmed. And just as a thought, if I could plant the seed of thought, in America, if one threatens someone else with harm, physical, spiritual, emotional, or otherwise, if you don't do what I say, I will hurt you if you don't do what I say. That's called extortion. I think the whole paradigm that grew up out of the invasive orthodoxies, I think it's an extortion racket. And it keeps people in a fearful, reactionary, easily controllable state. But that's not the teaching of Jesus. So if only the Christians that, you know, if only the people that were trying to come save our souls were actually behaving and thinking like Jesus, we'd have no issue whatsoever. Because I think what I do is what Jesus said to do. I try to heal people. I try to bring people. There's nobody left at the gate. I want to feed people. I want to make the table longer. I just want to keep adding more chairs. I don't want to exclude anyone. I believe everybody is the embodiment of the divine without exception. There can be no chosen people. There can be no superior race. There can be no one right way, because if divinity came into this world in this form, it's because divinity wanted to experience life in that way. And so it's radically inclusive and based in love and cooperation. That's our paradigm. And I would love to share that idea, because you can have that paradigm, practice witchcraft, call yourself a pagan, and still worship Yahweh, Jesus, Mother Mary, whoever else in that paradigm you want. You can still do that. There are Christian pagans. There are Christian witches. Because it's not exclusive. It's not exclusionary of those divine aspects or those characters. It's inclusive of them. But it changes the ethical framework. It changes what's your purpose here. And if your purpose here is to learn and grow and love and experience and make the world a better place, then we don't care who you worship.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that. Thankfully, evangelicalism is not a monolith. And what I try to do through this podcast is model a different way forward. I've had some guests on where I'm trying to say, let's expand the toolkit. Let's relate to religious others, not only in terms of evangelism or apologetic argument, but also in terms of an ethic. Let's do this in terms of a moral framework, that the best way to relate to the other is out of love, out of humility, weakness, service, hospitality, these kinds of things. So there are those elements in our tradition. Unfortunately, we just don't tap into them very much when it comes to relating to people in other religious traditions. So I appreciate that. I think we have some commonality there. So
we do. I absolutely affirm that. All now, those seeds are there in that tradition.
Yeah. Now you mentioned earlier in our conversation that you respected the freedom of EC preacher, is that his name, to come and have his message, and you have your freedom. So I want to touch bases on the religious freedom aspect, because I think that's very important. Unfortunately, many evangelicals and other conservative Christians, when they talk about religious freedom, what they mean is they're concerned about their religious freedoms, particularly when they think it's under attack. And many times, at least in the American context, in my view, that's questionable. It's really a challenge of Christian hegemony. Overseas, that's a very different case. Christianity quite often is under real persecution. But we don't often emphasize the need for religious minorities to have a seat at the table, a place in the public square, and so on. So as you reflect on, perhaps not in your experience, but what the broader pagan community goes through, like at these festivals, when these preachers come into your sacred space and they're shouting these messages, on the one hand, they see it as evangelism. And I know there's disagreements between our traditions on that. But do you see perhaps that they're using this preaching as a way of trying to limit the freedoms of others through a form of intimidation? That's how I, as a Christian, read these street preachers. What would your perspective be on that?
I agree with you. I think it's terrorism. I think it's a form of spiritual violence. You know, the difference between what I thought EC street preacher had the right to do in my situation and what you're describing, where they're yelling through the microphone, what he normally does when he's out there, because I've seen his other videos, he'll stand out there with his megaphone to interrupt business. That's his purpose. He wants to interrupt business. He wants to interrupt your conversation. He wants to shout over every other thing that's happening. It is a projection of his will into the atmosphere, into the entire situation, the community, and be the loudest voice there. That's violence. I don't think that sort of speech should be protected necessarily if it's at that volume and that sort of disruption. And so they often get chased away, you know, by the police, because look, you can stand here and you can hold your sign, but you can't scream at vulgarities at people. And they really do. It is terrible. They'll be screaming about, oh, masturbators and whores and whatever. And just the people walking down the street, it's not okay to do that. These people are mentally disturbed, as far as I'm concerned, if they think that sort of behavior is acceptable. I do question their mental stability when they do that. And in compassion, I would like to get them the help that they need. I see that they're victims of religious trauma, and this is how the baneful, toxic way in which that is expressing. I see the wound. I see their hearts bleeding onto the sidewalk and out into the, it's like, to use a more apt metaphor, it's like a boil just bursting all over everybody. It's an infection. It's a cancer. And so, no, I don't think that should be protected speech when it's done in that way. If they want to have a quiet conversation, or stand there and be and represent, whatever. But when you start to scream at people and interrupt their proceedings, if I came into somebody's church on a Sunday morning and stood at the door screaming about the goddess, how would they react to me? You know, how would they feel if I interrupted their service every time they tried to have one? I don't think that I should be allowed to do that either. Let them practice in peace in their building. But when we're at a park or we're having a festival, that is our church. We don't have big temples. You know, we create them where we are. And if we have the right to be there. And I don't think we should be interrupted by these folks. That's terrorism. It is religious terrorism.
Well, to bring our conversation to a close and on a positive note, for those Christians who are watching and listening who can be self-critical and who want to have a more positive encounter with pagans that they may know in their community or maybe another religious tradition. What suggestions would you have for how to improve those kinds of relationships?
To remember that we're all human beings that have free will to believe and think as we wish. Most people who are not Christian are not for very valid reasons. You know, they were raised in some other tradition, or they know better. They do know the Bible. They just choose not to practice that. And I would just always try to source everything I do from a place of love and compassion. I think if you do that, it opens doors. A heart that is opened already from the giving of love is prepared to receive love. That's the message that I've learned from divinity. The hand that is opened from helping others is the hand that is open and prepared to receive help from others. And we can cooperate in a pluralistic society. And I think we would find that at least among the good Christians and pagans that I know, that we have far more in common than not. But we do insist on being treated with the same civil rights, the same civil liberties, the same respect that the majority religion, that the overculture enjoys. That's it. Just respect people's rights.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful advice. And for what it's worth, folks can, if there are any pagans who come across this conversation, I've had relationships and conversations with pagans over the years and have really enjoyed that. I edited a volume called Beyond the Burning Times, A Christian and Pagan in Dialogue, that mm-hmm. brought an Australian Christian and Gus de Zariga, a pagan in America, together for a cordial conversation about where each tradition's coming from. So it can be done. We just need to pursue a different way forward. So, Heron, mm-hmm. I want to thank you so much for making the time and agreeing to come on the podcast for this conversation to tell your story with somebody that you didn't know, but you came through a personal recommendation. So I appreciate it.
Well, it's been a pleasure. I find these conversations to be informative and intellectually stimulating whenever I have it. So thank you very much.
Well, that's great. Well, I look forward to keeping tabs on what you're doing by reading your blog. I didn't know that you were a regular writer there. So that's fascinating.
Well, thank you. I do write a lot about my story on the blog in the past. So it's there in every gory detail.
Good. Well, again, folks need to check the podcast notes and they'll find links to the stories and Heron's metaphysical shop and all that, so folks can do further follow-up and even some links to some of these YouTube videos of these interesting encounters that have been had. So hopefully that'll be eye-opening. Again, thanks for coming on the program. This is the podcast for Multifaith Matters. Thanks to everybody for watching and listening.
Thank you.